Little Mania Midget Wrestling, all ages, doors at 7 o'clock.
Is it our guys?
I don't know who's going to be there.
Beautiful Bobby, Little Kato?
I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
$20 for ringside, I know that. It's at the Rev Room on Thursday night. Friday night, Frightened Rabbit. Special guest, Winter Sleep, all ages show again. And Saturday, Bam Margera's American Tour. This is the guy from Jackass. With Hunter Moore. Live music from Booyah Dad, and tickets are on sale now. A wild week at the Rev Room. Hopefully the weather will not be too wild over at Dickie Stevens Park. Traveler season's underway. We are joined by the manager of the Travelers, Tim Bogar, on the Revolution Hotline. Tim, thanks for coming in today. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
You bet. My job is to push the buttons, and then Phil Elson is here to ask all the pertinent baseball questions. But I do want to ask one question. You have come here from Boston, and it has been said many times over that Little Rock is the Boston of the South. Are you seeing a lot? I'm totally kidding. What's been the biggest adjustment for you as far as towns? I guess the upside is the traffic is probably a lot less, huh?
I enjoy the traffic here. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, rush hour is more like rush minute here, isn't it, Tim?
I love it. It's been really neat. Actually getting to know a lot of people around here and settling in. It's a nice community.
So when you came in, I guess, just talk to me about the process of taking over a team in the situation that you were in this year and some of the top orders of business and how the transition's been for you.
It's been fine. I actually have really enjoyed getting back to working with the younger players and getting an opportunity to teach a little bit more. And you know, we've gotten off to an okay start, 2-3, and you know, that type of transition is going to be good because these kids are young. We got some prospects. They got a lot of upside. So we got a lot of work to do. You know, I'm looking for good results down the road, not right now.
I've always wondered about the mentality of a manager at this level. And of course, your job is twofold, is to prepare these guys to move up. It's also to help your team win games. So talk to me about balancing that, because those may not always coincide.
They don't. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard for fans that are watching the game to understand really what's going on, because there's a lot of things within an organization that we have to accomplish. But for the most part, you know, the guys that are here that are the prospects in the organization, they have a plan for them, and we have to execute it. And along the way, you know, winning games is ultimately the goal. We want to develop winning players. But at the end of the night, we want them to be better as every night goes by. And come September 2nd or 3rd, we want these kids to be better than they were when they showed up here April 1st. So sometimes it's frustrating for people to watch because they don't really know the whole story, but that's our goal.
You and I talked, Tim, about the idea of in the minor leagues, you're gonna have to make mistakes to learn from them, not as a manager but as a player. Is that easy for a player to try to comprehend that, you know, I'm going to be pushed to do some things and I might make some mistakes, but it's okay. I'll learn from it. As long as I do learn from it, I'm doing all right.
Yeah. The hardest thing for these guys to do is to fail. And know that it's okay that they can fail. They don't want to get out of their comfort zone. And that's a hard thing to do for anybody at any time, but especially on a baseball field when you're trying to advance to the major leagues. You know, these guys, they have to do things that they've never done before just to see if they're capable of doing it. And if they can't do it, how can we make them do it? You know, there's talent there. We just got to make sure that it comes out.
Tim, you talked a lot about communication and how that's such an important thing, really, in any coaching job. But how is it different communicating to double-A players compared to a major league player, a guy that's already been to the pinnacle of his profession? You've been a major league coach for 5 years prior to taking over here with the Travelers. So is there any different communication, how you communicate between younger players and established major leaguers?
I'll tell you what, major league players, for the most part, everybody thinks they know it all. They don't need a lot of coaching, but you know, actually it's just the opposite. You know, major league players have unbelievable talent, and they can just show up every day and just walk out of the field and probably be successful. But the guys that are successful day in and day out at that level and stay for 10, 12, 15 years, guys like a Dustin Pedroia, guys like Derek Jeter, those type of players, they're constantly getting reminded of little things that are going to help them be successful. Now, the contrast to that in the minor leagues is these guys haven't had the experiences to fall back on. And that's my job and my coaching staff job, that to put the experiences we've had in their minds, so that when they do come up, you know, they might not the first time, they might not remember it, they might fail at it, but then they'll be like, oh yeah, I remember what the coaching staff told me about that, so I can put it in play. So they'll be successful more than not down the road.
Travis manager Tim Bogard joining us in the Zone on the Revolution Hotline. I've seen Bull Durham probably 10,000 times, and I'm not even embarrassed about it. I probably should be. But I always think about what that mentality is like. And, you know, for those guys, I would think, you know, while you're grinding and you're working to get better and working to move up, getting to the show is like winning a lottery to some degree. Do you remember your moment of moving up and what that was like? Was it as overwhelming as I would think it would be? Or
oh,
not?
My gosh. It's unbelievable. I'll tell you what, you know, you work your whole life to get there, and, you know, I was fortunate enough to be sitting in Yankee Stadium playing the Yankees in an exhibition game when I was with the Mets, when I got told, and it was kind of surreal. You know, you sit there, and you've worked your whole life to try to get that opportunity, and I was sitting on the bench, and Jeff Torborg was my manager, and he walked by me. It came down to be between a decision between myself and a reliever for the 25th spot on the team. And, you know, I'm staring out at the statues and 50,000 people. And he walks by and taps me on the leg and says, congratulations, kid, you made it. And he walked by and he walked away. And I just sat there with chills thinking, wow, my dreams just came true. And I'm sitting in the best stadium in all of America. So it was pretty neat.
You played in New York and Houston, and I guess your last year was with the Dodgers. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
What was your favorite city as far as playing in and dealing with fans, organizations, things like that? You were with the Mets, the Astros, and the Dodgers. For those who don't know, but what was your best experience as far as a town and organization, the whole experience?
Well, I'll tell you what, I enjoyed my years in New York, but I would have to say that Houston was probably my favorite place to be. Not just because of the city and that we won, but the team that we had together there. I mean, I was around a bunch of guys that were great baseball guys, great people, and we were basically like a band of brothers. I mean, we were together all the time, and, you know, I was fortunate enough, you know, to play with some really good players there, and right now I'm fortunate enough to coach with Mike Hampton, who I played there for 3 years with, and you know, we bring up stories daily about what we went through back then and some of the things we did. So Houston was a great place, not only because we had a great team, but more so because I've still, you know, probably have 6 or 8 really close friends from that time.
Tim Bogard joining us in the Zone again, Travis manager on the Revolution Hotline. Let me ask you about chemistry a little bit, and you're talking about it there. Because you guys are together for such a long period of time in baseball, more so than really just about any other sport as far as the number of games you guys play, is that something you can develop as a manager? If so, are there strategies you've seen, or is that just something that happens magically on certain teams better than others?
It's something I think the manager has a little bit of control over. I think, you know, a team basically mimics what the manager's like. You know, if he has control of a clubhouse, they're gonna be an extension of his personality, you know, at some point. And chemistry itself is hard to teach. It can be prodded, I think, a little bit to get some personality to come out, especially at this level. Double A, some guys are, you know, they're not really 100% ready to just go out there and let everybody know who they are. You know, they want to walk the line and not stray and be perfect, you know, because their goal is to get to the big leagues, you know. And but at some point, you know, we got to have some guys that they're fun. They should be fun. They should be having a good time, keeping the team loose. And then we need some guys that will step up and let guys know that they're not doing things right to be leaders in the clubhouse. You know, I know as a player, I didn't want the manager or the coaches always telling me everything every time something happened. It gets old. So when the players can do that themselves, That breeds good chemistry and a close-knit group, and usually leads to a lot more wins.
Tim, which manager that you might have played for or coached under do you think was outstanding, or maybe somebody that you take, you know, cues from as how to set the tone inside a clubhouse? And obviously, you spend plenty of time in major league clubhouses, so you know, you would have an idea of what works and what doesn't work. But what manager that you worked with kind of did that the best in your opinion?
Well, I was fortunate enough to be under a few of them, actually. Terry Francona, Tito was outstanding. I mean, I don't think there's a player that's ever played for him that didn't love him. You know, they might not have agreed with everything he did, but, you know, he cares about the players. He cares about them more than just being a baseball player, but as a person. You know, it's one of those things where I think at some point Tito, at the end of our run there in Boston, got the short end of the stick on that discussion. You know, he was a really good guy to, you know, make sure that everybody was on the same page and everybody was pulling in the same direction. That being said, I really enjoyed my year that I spent with Joe Maddon. I really did. I think Joe has an idea of what it takes to get players to, you know, not only do what they're capable of doing, but do what he would like them to do so that the team will be successful with what they have. I was just really fortunate to be under both of those guys at the major league level as a coach. In the minor leagues when I played, under Clint Hurdle, who's with Pittsburgh now, and mm-hmm. You know, Clint was great. I mean, he would bring all kinds of things into play. You know, he would bring in the fake hitting pills, so, you know, let us all know that we can hit, and we're going to go out and get 20 hits that night, stuff like that. He could really build confidence. So it was enjoyable to be under all kinds of different guys. You learn a lot, positive things. You learn some negative from some of the guys you've been under, and you know what, it makes you who you are and how you go about your business.
Did Joe Maddon ever let you wear his glasses?
I stole them from him a couple times just to see what it looked like.
What was it like working, your first year with the Astros was 97, I think, and that was an interesting year for, in a manager's case, because that was the year that Larry Durker replaced Terry Collins and came out of the broadcast booth to do it. Obviously, Durker had a great major league career as a pitcher, but it's pretty rare. I think only Jerry Coleman had done that before, and that was for 1 year, but Durker had success. He took, you know, he managed the Astros to the playoffs 3 years in a row. What was he like as a manager? Because he was he's a really interesting man.
Durk's awesome. I mean, he's like your older brother, your older uncle that would take you out, you know, and show you a good time. But he was extremely knowledgeable, knew the game extremely well. You know, the actual game itself, but the history of it and how things should work. His philosophy I really enjoyed, and I actually try to implement it myself. It's you know, his pitching staff, his starters, and Mike Hampton could probably speak on this a little bit better, but he told them, you know, you're pitching six innings. I don't care if you give up six runs or no runs, you're pitching six innings. I'm not letting you kill my bullpen. You know, so he had some good baseball sense, but you know, as the game was going on, he might not have been the perfect strategic guy as the game was happening, but he always could apply what happened the day before to the next day, and it gave us a good opportunity to win. He was a lot of fun to be around. He was a joy to be around, and I love talking baseball with him.
Well, Tim, we close out the season opening homestand tonight against the Rockhounds, and I'm excited to watch Michael Roth pitch. The Angels selected him out of South Carolina last year, pitched very well in Orem. I think he logged about 260 innings between college and the minor leagues, and he'll make his Double-A debut today. I know that the teams change during spring training day by day, but did you get a chance to see Roth pitch at spring?
I did. I saw him one time. Actually, the time I got to see him was the first time he had pitched after he had gotten hit by a line drive in his pitching arm. So he was just kind of, we sent him back out there 4 days later, just kind of get a feel for where he was at, make sure he was okay. So I never really got to see him against live competition at his best. The other day he threw a simulated game here on the field, and I was, well, let's put it this way, we ran out of bats. There was wood flying everywhere. He was throwing the ball real well. It was good to see, and I'm really excited to see him get out there and make his debut here in Double A. And I'm excited about his upside. He's a competitor, and I think he's really blessed to have Mike Hampton with him. You know, another lefty to lean on a little bit, and you know, he's got the same type of mentality that Mike had. He's a bulldog. He goes after people. He's fun to be around. He's a good kid. He's funny. He's actually been through a lot of tough competition in those two College World Series. You know, so nothing gets on him. Nothing surprises him. He's a great kid, and you know, tonight's going to be fun to watch.
My broadcast partner Matt Dude has interviewed him. It'll be on our pregame show before the broadcast today. And when Matt came into the booth after the interview, he sits down. He says, "That Michael Roth is an interesting guy. This is going to be a great interview to play." So I'm looking forward to hearing that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, he's the kind of kid that you want to sit down next to and get to know, because he's bright, he's intelligent, he's got a good sense of humor, and he's baseball savvy also. So I hope he's here all year, and then again, I hope he's gone quick. Hmm. So we'll see what happens.
There you go. That is the rub with a minor league manager, isn't it?
It sure is. It's tough. When you get good players, you want them out of here as quick as possible.
Well, Tim, I hope we can get you back in, and there is no rub to that. So we can. We need to do it again sometime. Maybe get you in studio one day. Really enjoyed it today. Thanks so much for the time.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime. I love it.
Okay,
thanks.
Good deal. Good luck tonight. Thanks.
Thanks.
That's Tim Bogar, the new manager for the Travelers. Thanks for setting that up, Phil. I appreciate it. What a good guy.
He's great.
Well, we didn't. I mean, there's a million things you can get into. I mean, when you play in the league as long as he did, seven seasons, I guess it was. I mean, he's you know, seen a lot, done a lot, and again, the last 4 years, we didn't even delve into his time in Boston and what ended up being a bit of a debacle at the end. There, certainly not on him, but you know, to be able to go to, I mean, you want to talk about a mix of emotions, to be able to go to truly one of the great, not just ballparks, but sports facilities in the world every day for your job. But having all that mess going on behind the scenes, or I guess not so behind the scenes when you're in Boston.
And you remember last year was the 100th anniversary of Fenway Park, and you know, one of the worst seasons in Red Sox history. So, Tim's really an interesting manager and a baseball man, because I think so often we think in sports as, you know, we're thinking of skill set. You know, what does a guy do well? Does he have a nice swing? Does he have trouble, you know, recognizing the fastball? That kind of stuff. He's a neck up sort of a guy. He's really into the thinking aspects of the game of baseball, which I think is a lot of fun to talk to somebody like that. Perfect, yeah. For talk shows.
I agree. Well,
long form radio.
Just like Chris Cromwell, he's a neck up kind of restaurant operator. So you're very similar to Tim Bogar.